Hey, everybody, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. How are you? I'm good. Pretty good week. Great Adam Ray and Buddy show at the Comedy Store. If you missed it, holy shit, get your ass to L.A., man. Wow. Comedy Store main room. Let's just go through it. Me, Christina Hutchinson from the Guys We Fuck podcast. Brendan Schaub from the Fighter and the Kid podcast. Andrew Santino from I'm Dying Up Here. Joe Rogan, Adam Devine, Dane Cook, and my boy Brad Williams. What a show, dude. It was unbelievable. The next one's July 18th. The lineup's going to be sick. We're looking at Bill Burr, Chris D'Elia, Nick Swartzen, and hopefully my boy Dana Carvey again. So get your tickets at hollywood.comedystore.com. Next Adam Ray and Buddy show, July 18th, Comedy Store main room. Today's episode, man, talk about a guy that I've looked up to and seen in pretty much everything. An IMDb page that is goes on for days. One of the most genuinely funny dudes I think I've ever met in Hollywood, and I can say that from working with him on Return of the Mac with Joey McIntyre and his countless sketch and improv shows with the Groundlings. Look up his IMDb. He's been in everything, and he's a roll away from really becoming a breakout star. And then everyone's going to be like, yeah, I knew that. You'll be like, yeah, well, fucking now it's happening, so... I knew it before you did. So take that. I'm talking about Jordan Black. Jordan Black, baby. Groundlings alum. Former SNL writer. Starred with me on Return of the Mac. Has been in so many TV shows. For Your Consideration. The Christopher Guest movie. He gets into working with Christopher Guest and his journey into improv, which is fascinating. I'm always fascinated by... performers that are just at the top of their game, how they found comedy. And he also tells a great story about working at SNL when Donald Trump hosted that'll kind of blow your fucking mind, as well as breaking down the usage of the N-word with Brad, because this was shortly after Bill Maher had gotten in trouble for casually dropping the N-bomb on his show. So this episode's so much fun, a lot of laughs, and just a really informative episode about comedy. If you love comedy, you're going to love this episode. So follow Jordan on Twitter, at Jordan Black. Follow me on Twitter, at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at Alan Podcast, at Alan Podcast on Instagram. Brad Williams Comic on Instagram, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram. I'm sorry. Jordan's Twitter handle is not Jordan Black. It's at Fake Jordan Black. At Fake Jordan Black. So follow that motherfucker on Twitter, at Fake Jordan Black. Tonight, I am in Boston at the House of Blues for the Roast of Big Poppy. Holy shit. Josh Wolf got me on the show. It's me, Bill Burr, Dustin Pedroia, Rob Gronkowski, Sarah Tiana, Anthony Mackie, Lenny Clark, Jonathan Coachman from ESPN. And Big Poppy. Holy shit. What a lineup. Very pumped, to say the least. I flew out my friend Jen, who's the makeup artist for Mad TV, and she's going to make me up like a 65-year-old man who's a diehard Yankee fan, and I'm going to roast Big Poppy and all the other bastards. It's going to be great. Hopefully I get tape of this to show you guys. But it's sold out. House of Blues Boston, but if you can find a scalper ticket, come out. 6 p.m. House of Blues Boston. And then next weekend, I'm at the Parlor Live headlining my hometown club, Parlor Live in Bellevue, Washington, June 29th through July 1st. Get your tickets at AdamRayTV.com. Bunch of other dates I'm going to be adding for the rest of the summer. Austin, Denver, Chicago, New York City. Can't wait. Check AdamRayTV.com for all those dates. And go see Brad Williams this weekend in Houston, Texas, June 23rd and 24th at the Improv, Friday and Saturday. Tickets to BradWilliamsComedy.com, AboutLastNightPodcast.com for your ALN merch. The site will be revamped in the next month. We got a ton of new merch coming, so make sure you're checking that out. And make sure you're subscribed and rate us on iTunes. 5-star rating, comment on the iTunes page, helps us climb the charts. You guys are the best fans ever, which is why I'm going to read some heartfelt comments and emails that you guys sent us. Again, giving shout-outs to the ALN fans, and then email us back with your address so that we can send you some free merch. Janelle McLeod said, I don't know how I stumbled across your podcast, but I'm so happy I did because I've been hooked for months. You guys keep me laughing all day at work, and I have to put my head down sometimes so my boss doesn't see me giggling. Your recent episode with Will Sasso had me cracking up, especially because every chance he got, he threw in his impression of Smash Mouth's Somebody Once Told Me. Somebody once told me. That was so fucking funny. He nailed it. You guys nailed every episode, and I can't wait to be in a town where you perform so I can see you live. Thank you, Janelle McLeod. Hit us back with your address so we can send you some free ALN merch. Holy shit. From Down Under, Adrian Graham from Australia says, catching up with the pod, and I've only just heard this, so I'm probably too late for mention on the pod. I've been a fan for 18 months or so. Look forward to each episode. Love listening to you guys while I'm driving or flying for work. Every episode has great laugh out loud moments. What I enjoy the most is being exposed to comedians that wouldn't necessarily have airtime down here in Australia, except Jim Jefferies, of course. Also, your interaction with fans on various social media should be commended. Keep up the great work and look forward to some live shows down under. Adrian Graham from Australia. Dude, thank you for the love. And just talk to my boy Divine. He's working on an Australia tour for next year, so hopefully I get to go with, and you could see us live there. Thank you for all the emails and tweets and Facebook comments. You guys are the best fans in the world. And now that we got the fan shout-outs out of the way, those are the Twitter handles, the merch info, the tour dates. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the very, very funny and talented and just all-around fucking great dude. It's Jordan Black.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. No podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
So here's the movie game, which is totally fine.
Which is totally fine. And we've, look, when we first started this, we had like bits and games. And like one of our bits was like that I would just do Tony Danza every 10 minutes and interrupt the podcast.
Yeah. And we like, call, and we had a very clever name yeah. for it. It was called Interrupting Tony Danza.
Okay.
And so we would just be talking, much like you and I are doing right now.
Right.
Just hanging out talking. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden.
Hey, Brad.
Oh,
hey,
shit. Hey, it's Interrupting Tony Danza.
Hey, Jordan. Hey.
We're in the middle of something right now, Mr. Danza.
So, no, that's fine. It's fine. You know, I want to talk to you, Jordan, because I just saw A Color Purple, and that movie.
That's not necessary.
No, but no, hear me out. Hear me out. It's
not cool. I heard you.
Apparently, it's interrupting racist Tony Danza as well.
who was your first? You came out in L.A. What year?
1988. When you were in junior high school.
88.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you look younger than both of us.
Well, you know, shape. I'm black.
I think there.
No. That's the trade-off of being black. You don't get to be in charge of anything, but you get to hold on to your youth
okay.
a little longer.
That and like even when you're in your 60s, I feel like black guys could still wear like a cartoon character on their shirt
mm-hmm.
and it'd be like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, Well, because whatever black guys do pretty much sets the standard for what is cool. And
yeah, absolutely.
Else comes down from there.
So do you have any tips? Like, what's coming down the pipeline? Like,
what's the new black fat?
What should I get ready
for? I'm an improv actor. I'm very, very, very far from what's hip and cool in the black community.
Who was the, when you came out here, who was the first, person or celebrity you encountered that you were
okay.
like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm curious when people first get out and they're starting, like, who did they, you know, sometimes even it's not somebody that was super famous, but you had a run in and you're so unfamiliar with that experience that you're like, oh my God.
Oh, I can tell you.
Danny Bonaducci.
You know. I remember vividly.
Right. Okay.
I worked at a supermarket here in LA called Boys Market, which is now bought out by Ralph's, but back then it was Boys. I worked there.
Hell yeah.
Boys Market sounds like a dream place for a lot of people.
It was in Inglewood.
Okay. Bagging groceries?
I started doing that. Then I quickly became a cashier because I wasn't in college. They were like, oh, you're young and we can work you all the hours for very little pay.
Oh,
get some of these middle-aged guys making the top dollar.
With their needs and families.
Right.
Like, fuck them.
Let's give all the hours
stupid
to the kid.
They just
and probably faster hands for scanning all the shit, right?
Much faster.
Yeah.
But no, I was walking through the store one day and lo and behold, there is Curtis Blow. Yeah. And I was new to LA from a small town, so I'd never seen a celebrity before. So I was like, oh my God. I was like, you're Curtis Blow, which he knew and because his necklace said it. By the way. I'm not exaggerating.
Get the fuck out.
His necklace said Curtis Blow. And
God.
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, you know, he was really cool. And I was like freaking out in my head, but trying to be cool. And I was like, yeah, I'm a fan. And like, you know, and I was like, and then I immediately went home and called my relatives back home and said, you will never guess who I just saw at the grocery store.
Damn it. I was trying to do a Curtis Blow song and then it came out of commercial. Stupid mummy movie.
Oh man, that's so Curtis Blow though.
I mean, he would totally have a
he
mummy commercial.
Lets you down. He always
lets you down. You up and talk to him at all?
That was it. That's what I just shared is about all I said to him.
is blow. And I want you to know that these are the breaks.
Oh my God.
Well, Curtis Blow was also the first rapper I ever heard on the radio.
Like, yeah,
I
yeah.
never heard rap on the. I saw rap once at a block party in Chicago. It was the first time I ever saw that art form. And then Curtis Blow on the radio was like, and I was not remotely into rap music.
Yeah,
I didn't really get into rap music till Tupac hit the scene.
Dude, I mean that's, but you know what? I mean, I kind of the same thing, but only because you know I was so I grew up in the Seattle grunge area, so I was okay. like,
so you had access to I was those like,
what's
guys?
Rap?
Yeah,
I'm all about. Presidents of the United States of America.
I mean,
is that a band?
Yeah, they oh, are. God. Yeah, they did.
They
a,
still are.
They did a "She's Lump." Remember
and,
that song?
And Peaches.
This is very, where this is where my blackness starts to show.
Very yeah. selective blackness.
Now, I know the, it is. It, yeah,
but like, it does come out.
Like, I know, like I know, like the hit grunge act. Yeah, you know,
sure, sure,
you
sure.
You give me, you know, yeah, smells like Teen Spirit. Yeah, I'm all with that.
Soundgarden, your Pearl Jam.
Soundgarden, yeah.
You know that
Pearl Jam. I love those guys.
We get into the deep cuts. She's Love.
Well, what Mother Love Bone? That was like Pearl Jam before Eddie Vedder.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wow,
so like,
good call.
Only because I love Pearl Jam, so I kind of
do. You really?
Okay. Uh huh. Well, I mean, I love Nirvana. I love Pearl Jam. I love Soundgarden, but that's because their videos played on MTV. So
right,
that was the beautiful thing about MTV. I was thinking about this the other day.
Yeah.
That I love like all types of music. Like I love, you know, R&B, hip hop, but also love Springsteen and Pearl Jam. Because when I was as a kid waiting on a Michael Jackson video to come on, John Cougar Mellencamp videos also came on, and I was just like, man, the fourth time you hear Little Pink Houses, you're just like, that's my jam now. That's my jam.
Also, you're so pumped for the MJ video that you're like, that enthusiasm is bleeding over into like whatever's going to happen before that.
Yeah, it's all good. Like Cyndi Lauper, great. Time after time, bring it.
Yeah, it's like you're so excited for that first hand job that her just holding your hand. You're like, this is just as good.
Right, it's just as good. Exactly how I would describe
I'm sure Cyndi Lauper's never heard her music compared to a hand job before, but
she has.
Yeah,
you don't know Lauper like we
I mean, girls do know how to have fun.
It's so funny you mentioned that. I was having a similar like MTV conversation the other day, and it's like it is kind of bonkers that just music videos, and I guess they're still big, like on YouTube, right? Like they're still,
yeah, but, I guess. So. But are they like, big though?
But you have to seek them out.
You seek out what you
right.
It keeps out anything you're not interested. It's like, you know, Fox News,
MSNBC, you know, like whatever.
MSNBC is just watch what you want to watch, and you don't ever get exposed to things outside of your
like.
Also,
yeah,
it's not an event. You know what I'm saying?
No. Never. Music videos were an event when I was a kid,
and they're still just as like. I mean, probably
the music is
better.
Great.
Like the videos that they're producing.
Yeah.
So you'd think they would be more of an event now.
Nobody cares. I remember when they would do like a week long. Like I remember when Michael Jackson's Scream was gonna come out.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
That was like it was the most expensive video of all time.
Yeah.
It was Michael and Janet together. Yep.
That had never happened.
And it's gonna.
The last time they were together was when Joe beat them together.
Before that was when they was getting ass whooped together.
That was their newest collaboration.
But it's like, why wouldn't they take advantage of like, look, like, be like, after tonight's season finale of the Game of Thrones comes a new Lady Gaga video.
I don't know. I would assume people would. Like if it's the only place that's exclusive, you can only see it here.
Here's Hanson with Umbop 2. You know,
right, yeah, I'm tuning in.
I've been waiting for Umbop 2. Hell, we just announced last week that we're gonna get a Top Gun 2.
I know.
So
you know what my favorite thing about
Umbop 2.
You know what my favorite thing about the Top Gun 2 announcement?
What's that?
Was Val Kilmer going on social media and saying, "Hey, and I'm ready to go." Yeah, Val, we know you're available.
Yeah.
We know you're ready to. What? Why wouldn't you? And Tom Cruise was asked about it. He was like, "Yeah, we're gonna have a lot of fun." Like that was the response.
We're gonna call him.
Right,
it was like, not Iceman's gonna be.
We're gonna
be
have
there.
So much stuff going on. It's gonna be. Yeah. I'm just like.
By the way, weird.
That's, I might as well have gone on social media and say, "Hey, I'm ready for Top Gun 2. I'm ready. I'm available.
I can play one of those guys in the aircraft carrier that like points out to the ocean when the jet flies by. I can do it." It's so funny you bring up Val Kilmer. He was my first celebrity encounter.
Are you serious?
Yes.
How was it?
It was at the 76 station right at the bottom of this street. I was waiting in line to go into the open mic night at the Laugh Factory.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, you see this beautiful old Chevy like pull up, gorgeous car. And ironically enough, I had two of the little people with me. They were there to support me on my open mic night. I would have never done that again if I could do it all over. But yeah, come see me and a bunch of other comics suck 2 hours
for 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Three minutes each. And then, like, we recognize Val Kilmer, and we all three of us cross the street, which I would love to have been someone who was just randomly looking out their apartment window and see three midgets running across the street. They'd just be like, it's my lucky day.
Especially if that's their first day in Hollywood, you know?
Like, does that just happen here?
Does the rainbow start over there?
Yeah, and you know, we don't really run, we scurry. So, and then
I love that you can do those jokes, because I can do the black jokes, you can do those jokes.
Yes.
Adam better shut the fuck up. You better not say a damn thing, Adam.
I got the Jew jokes.
Okay, all right.
But so we run over there, and we're just like, hey, Mr. Kilmer, we want to get a picture. Yeah. And then I yell out, we want to recreate Willow. Because he was Mad Mardigan in Willow. Right. And then,
great call.
And then that's what, like, he was kind of like, whatever. And then when he heard we want to recreate Willow, he goes, all right, I got to get a picture with you guys. So
I love it.
He got a picture. And I don't know how this happened. I don't know if someone stole this picture from my MySpace profile or whatever. The photo ended up on collegehumor.com.
Yes.
If you remember that website.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And it was like three midgets in Willow, like Willow 2.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And that was my first ever Brad went viral.
What era of
this
Val
is
Kilmer?
Like, oh, this is not fat Val Kilmer yet.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, so good
is,
Val Kilmer.
Yeah, good Val Kilmer. This was when
before he got humbled by the industry.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know why I said that like a rich.
Yeah.
We brought him down.
We got Val Kilmer. Iceman goeth. But yeah, so that this was like 2000. I just started comedy, so 2005.
Yeah, he was such a good actor. He's still a great actor.
Yeah,
right?
Now he's
so good.
Now he's touring comedy clubs.
Is he doing stand up?
No, he's not doing stand up. He's showing a movie where he played Mark Twain, and he's offering like Mystery Science Theater 3000 commentary while the movie plays.
But
so,
to be funny, to a comedian.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
So you're watching Val Kilmer watch Val Kilmer in this weird, like,
movie.
Fucked up, like, Norman Rockwell situation. Mm-hmm. You're watching Val Kilmer watch Val Kilmer play Mark Twain.
Oh, my God.
Which is
I'd
like.
I'd watch that, though.
I mean, that.
I'd totally watch that.
That's what Christopher Nolan is like. That's what I wanted Inception to be. You watching Val Kilmer playing Mark Twain.
And Spike Jones is saying that about Inside. what is it? Being John Malkovich. That's it. That's Val Kilmer's doing
that's
it.
That's what I was going
I
for.
I love Kilmer. And I love new Kilmer, too, now. Like, old new Kilmer.
Wait, but I want to know, bringing up Top Gun, and you got kind of pumped for that, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Top Gun, too?
Yeah.
Of course, I'm an 80s baby. I'm all about.
Yeah. But now, the show that I still have yet to come see, but I want to, is called, is it the black version?
Yeah.
So, the black version of Top Gun?
Well, we do live improv show with all black cast.
Okay.
And then the audience suggests a movie, a popular movie from the past.
Is this at Groundlings?
Yeah, we started at Groundlings. We've done Largo, and then we've done a lot of other places. But yeah, in LA, we do Largo and we do the Groundlings. And yeah, so we've literally done Top Gun. We've done the
so they do
version.
The black version of the movie.
Oh,
right?
Man.
Yeah. How fucking brilliant is that? Yeah. And it's, I mean, the best. It's you.
And it's all improv. It's me. Cedric Yarbrough, Gary Anthony Williams, Daniel Gaither, Naima Funk, and Phil Lamar. And then originally two of our original members were Key and Peele. They were in until they blew up.
Whatever happened to them?
I don't know. I feel bad for them. I just feel bad for them.
I mean,
nothing's happening.
Nothing's going on for them. It's not like
and you know what the thing about it is so sad is that they're so talented.
One's recognizing their talent. Right. You know what? I bet that they could even do more than act. I bet. Especially Jordan. Yeah. Like, he could probably direct.
Get
probably
out.
Probably. No, you don't think so?
Is
America ready for a black director?
Look, everyone has their journey, and I think once you just, you know.
Yeah, you just.
And to answer your question, Brad, no. We're not ready.
Adam says that you
I love how
ready.
The two biggest movies of the year in a bunch of like sequels and rehashes, and but the two biggest movies of the year are Wonder Woman and Get Out.
Yeah.
So you have a female director and a black director.
I love that.
I love that.
Me too. I love it too.
Yeah, because you're like, hey, I'll get a shot.
Yeah, I hope so. Let me direct the next Avengers movie.
Yeah. Right?
Don't be racist, Hollywood.
Right.
If I don't get to direct it, it's because Hollywood is racist.
Do you feel like it?
All
like
Black
it
Panther all the time.
Yep.
It's all Black Panther. Iron Man, fuck that guy.
Right. Luke Cage. I throw in Luke Cage.
Sure.
You know, that's it, you know. And then a black super, like Black Spider-Man. In the comic books, he's black now, right? Or his black and Hispanic.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. I feel like that's
what is
Spider-Man
next, though.
Spider-Man is black now.
I just saw. Is it the Spider-Man and Iron? Like Robert Downey Jr. was in the Spider-Man
Homecoming.
Yeah,
which
is that the new one?
Yeah, that's the newest Spider-Man.
So he goes to prom.
No, he goes to Homecoming.
Right.
Yeah. So then,
that's why it's not called Spider-Man Prom.
All right. Jesus Christ.
So dumb.
Spider-Man Corsage.
Now, I wish it was called Spider-Man Prom. I'd be so mad.
Would you? Do you love the? Are you?
No, I'm not a big comic books guy, but I do like a good movie. So the Avengers movies are good. So
they are. I haven't seen so many of them.
I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen a lot of them.
Iron Man's are my favorite because I love Robert Downey and
RDJ.
The first one is insanely
unbelievable.
Yeah.
And even the Spider-Mans are great because it's like, who does it like?
Well, the new Spider-Man looks so good.
It does.
Yeah.
And then, now, but why shouldn't there be a black Spider-Man? Like you joked about that.
No, I'm saying in the comic book, black Spider-Man is black now. He's a black teenage kid.
Yeah.
I think he's half black, half like Puerto Rican or something.
Right. No, we got to go full black Spider-Man.
Yeah, right. Let's not let's not fuck around. We're going to do it. Let's do it.
It's like,
you know, one drop. It's the one drop rule. Y'all made that rule. So no, not you, Adam, because you're Jewish.
But wait, what's the story with black?
Not my people, the dwarves. My people, the whites.
White, the white.
Okay,
you're white first.
Yeah,
trust
me. No, trust me. I know. I got out of three tickets 2 weeks ago. So yes, white comes first.
Mm-hmm. What's the story of black Spider-Man? Is there one?
I don't. Yeah,
somebody have to write it
in the comic. Oh, you mean what? If someone made the movie, the black Spider-Man.
Oh, man.
First of all, that's a short movie. Come on. Ain't nobody going to let... First, a black man with a mask on, a ski mask over his face, is getting shot by the cops.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
It's against the law to swing through the city if a black man is doing it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So right.
You know, can you imagine? And then they're just hunting down other black men because they're like, well, that's got to be him.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then
it's like, I was saving that lady. Then why you got that purse?
White lady? Yeah, you saving that white lady? Nah, we ain't.
Maybe she didn't want to be saved by a black man, son. Like, oh.
We have white women like going, oh my God, Spider-Man, I love Spider-Man. Nah, that ain't happening. we're not doing that.
The boyfriend would be like, you are not being saved by Black Spider-Man.
Right, exactly.
We are waiting for Thor.
We will drown, bitch. We will drown before we let that motherfucker save you. Now, I'll let him save me because whatever, but.
Yeah, he's not saving you.
It'd be the first superhero that would be so smooth, though, that he'd like rescue somebody. Then he'd be fucking him in the alley, and then he'd be like, I gotta go save somebody else real quick.
Yeah.
But Spider-Man,
I'll be back.
That's all superheroes, I think, right? Because they can just
for
do that.
For sure.
Yeah. That's why none of them are married. Because it's like, why would I get? Yeah. It's like an NBA player. I never understand why they get married. And then when they get caught for cheating, I'm like, we know you're gonna cheat.
Yeah.
Like, we know you're gonna fuck around.
Man, I mean, look, I don't.
42 nights a year.
Give me a break.
You are in a different city where you can fuck anybody you want
on the road, and especially with social media. There's an app that like is like, I don't know if it's called like Baller Tracker or something like that. Yeah, there's an app where women like go like, hey, just saw James Harden outside of this club, and then all the hoes just swarm.
Harden gets a hoe alert or what?
Harden gets a hoe alert, which was a Dr. Seuss cut.
No,
wait a minute.
From the makers of Horton Hears a Who comes Harden gets a hoe alert. Oh my God! Beep, beep.
Hey,
but seriously, I'm always like, why are you? You don't want to be married. It's so obvious you don't want to be married.
Yes.
Like, and why do? Just because they want to feel like I got that stability. Because guess what? A couple days out of the year, they talk to their wife and they're like, man, I got a family.
I think it's peer pressure because so many of them do it. It's like my brother was in the military. He got in the military at 17. He got married at 21.
Wow.
And I was like, he shouldn't have been. It was just like, oh, because everybody in the military is like engaged to somebody and getting married.
Yeah, and they're all going off.
Right.
And yeah,
so it's like, you want to come back from your home. Hey, here's my fiance. You know, here's my wife.
Yeah,
we're having a kid.
Right.
It's like, it's stupid.
Well, yeah, Greg Giraldo had that fantastic joke when Tiger Woods got caught cheating. And where he's like, you understand, like everyone's judging Tiger like, oh, how could he do this? It's like, no. Because if you're living in Kansas and you say no to 99.9% of the pussy offered to you, you don't get any pussy.
Right.
If Tiger Woods says no to 99.9% of the pussy offered to him, he fucks 235 women a year.
Right. 100%.
Like 100%. That's how much is being thrown at him.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I saw what Chris Rock was talking about, how when he was married, you know, because he's divorced now, but how he thought it was okay for him to cheat sometimes. Because, like, I'm Chris Rock, you know. And like he said, like there,
I hope that was his explanation when he got caught.
That's pretty much how he put it. This was in Rolling Stone magazine interview, so unless they misquoted him. But but he was saying like how he thought like, yeah, I only cheated 3 times on my last tour, and they were saying like the audience sort of like groaned at him. He was like, look, if nobody's trying to fuck you, it's easy for you to stay. You know, monogamous.
Yeah.
He said, but if everybody's trying to fuck you and you only fuck 3 of them,
it's good.
You're cool. I mean, you're a good guy. You're one of the good ones.
Yeah.
You're one of the
dad of the year.
Right. Dad of the year.
It's something where it's just fascinating to me that, and it's also fascinating to me on not just the guys that cheat, but then the women that keep pursuing them. It's like, you know how this story ends.
No,
you know how.
Like, that's why, like, when I saw like the Tiger Woods women, like with Gloria Allred on TV, and she's like crying. I thought we were in love.
There's
bullshit. Well, then you have to be the dumbest person I've right. ever met. He's yeah. married, and publicly
on
married.
People Magazine.
He won't take you out publicly. Right. Any man who won't take you out publicly does not give a shit about you.
You're just, and you're like, I was used. It's like, I think you were aware of that.
But 100%, yeah, you were used.
Like, you were used, but there was probably an agreement there. You didn't think that it was like, no, he's gonna leave the mother of his children, the Swedish like
no way. Just think about how y'all met. You had on short shorts at Hooters. That's not gonna be your story. We met at Hooters and we fucked in the bathroom that night.
He was married.
He gave me his assistant's phone number. And I mean, I just, oh my god, I just like it. Just it, everything just fell into place. Like that's not gonna be your story.
Dude, I think about that. Those stories are out there. Like, isn't it sometimes like when I'll get dragged to a nightclub once in 50 attempts at this stage in life, and like I go and I see like a dude down like a drink, then down a shot, then beeline to a chick and just start rubbing his dick on the back of her leg, and her turn around and be like, oh shit, you know what, yeah, fucking, I haven't felt a boner on my knee in a while, and then she's into it, and then like later in the night, like 2 hours later, I'll see them like making out, and I'm like, dude, and then I'll fast forward in my head, I'm like, what if they fucking get married and that's their story tonight, how they met? You know what I'm saying? Like then, kids like,
Grandma, Grandpa, how'd you meet?
Well, I'll tell you, tequila. Why's my name tequila? Easy vodka soda. You know?
It's just because you were named after how we met. they probably change it like, well, because your father had a suave line. Which is suave line was, you like that bitch? Like, exactly.
Hilarious. What were what was the advice you got in Kankakee, Illinois?
Oh, good. Yes.
How do you pronounce
it? Like he did, just not as slow, but Kankakee.
But that sounds like the noise you make when you come.
Well, you're telling us a lot right now. You should probably see a doctor. I'm just gonna see if you got it.
You guys don't do that?
I like how Brad deflected that. Like, this is probably what it sounds like, right?
Right? You guys don't go like, you guys don't do that?
The whole premise of this podcast from day one was to try to get me on the show.
Yes.
So you could ask, is that normal? And the answer is no.
That's not normal.
So it's good on you that you did it.
Well played, Brad.
You need to see a doctor.
Yeah. What noises are you making?
Cancel your plans.
Me, I go, Bakersfield. That's normal. That's what everybody does, right?
Bakersfield. Does everyone say Bakersfield?
You know,
is it all like Central California
Bakersfield
cities?
Bakersfield wasn't getting enough love.
Is it like Bakersfield, Fresno,
Solving,
Oildale? Is it all? Is it all that? Does it like go through a rotation?
For me, yes.
Okay.
It's all the outer boroughs of Los Angeles.
Modesto.
Oh, my God.
Like that?
Yeah, see, that's normal.
I was doing...
Brad, that's normal orgasm sound.
I was doing Illinois the entire time.
No one does that.
That's why it took me so long to get
What is... If you could if you could explain to somebody who is going to travel there, like, what would you say? Hey, do these three things. You know what I'm saying? People ask me when they go to Seattle, they go, what should I do? And I tell them, like, I give them a standard, like, space, you know. Sometimes I don't say that because I go, you're probably going to do that anyway. But I give them like a restaurant or a shop or an area. Like,
here's the things I would tell them. All these things I did not know about when I was a kid. So I hated living there.
Oh, shit.
When I go back to visit, here are things I've discovered as an adult.
Okay.
Because I take an interest in things.
It's always like that,
as a kid,
right?
I took an interest in nothing. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I think some of the adults should have told me some of the things that were cool about my town.
Yeah.
But go to Dairy Queen because it's the first one ever.
So first one ever.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hot Eats Cool Treats started.
And it's
a
what do you call it? Not a kiosk, but it's
marquee.
Yeah, it's like the kind where you can't go inside. It's just like, you know, they flip.
Oh, just a stand.
It's a stand. Thank you.
Oh, it's a Dairy Queen,
and it's the first one ever. And then I learned that on Wikipedia.
Dude, you're talking to a former fat kid who wanted to be sponsored by Blizzards. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, like, so, you know, like, so I'm sure
that... Did they start the whole turn it upside down thing to show you?
What a fucking dumb question. Yes, they did.
I want to know more answers.
Did the Dilly Bar start there? Fucking welcome back to Yes, It Did.
You visit the river. We have a beautiful river, you know, where you can, like, get on the boats and get out there and say it's really pretty.
Nice in the summer, I'm sure.
Very nice in the summer. And you can visit the, what's the from the Midwest, the architect.
Frank Lloyd Wright?
Frank Lloyd Wright. There's a lot of Frank. Ooh. We have a couple of Frank Lloyd Wright homes there.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I don't know how I pulled that.
And I'm like, as a kid, I would have loved to have known that a famous architect had built a couple of houses in my town. Because I felt like my town was a town that no one cares about or knew about, and nothing ever happened there. So I was like, one of the most famous architects ever built a couple. Oh, can I go look at them?
Right. And see why the hell they're so great?
Yeah, and they are great. Like, I love Frank Lloyd Wright. But yes. So
what would you do? What was growing up?
But it's a day trip.
Yeah.
It's a day trip.
Like, what were your days?
You're not spending a week in.
Wait, what happened to your pants just now? Yeah.
Sorry.
What would you do on the week? Nice.
Nothing. Nothing.
Yep. I said zip to let you know.
I mean, it was nothing.
Fly was up.
Can I tell you what? Like, as a little kid, you just know how to entertain yourself. You ride your bike around town to your friends' houses. You go to the park. You hang out. You do park stuff.
And your neighborhoods were like chill enough to where you could just.
Oh, it's a super. I was growing up, it was literally open the door, get out of my house. And I don't want to see you until 6 o'clock.
It was one of those neighborhoods.
Yeah, I don't want to see you. Don't want to hear from you.
Isn't that the best though, man?
It's the best way to grow.
Kid adventures.
Yeah. And had plenty of them.
And so where, like what? Like,
I mean, it was like you hang out at your friends.
Yep.
Do
you have like woods?
We would play baseball in front of the house.
Yep.
Football in the middle of the street.
Yep.
Chase girls.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But there's
tag, free tag.
Were you the funny one in your group of friends?
My brother was a year older than me. People would always say, oh, you're Paul's brother? Oh, you're the comedian's brother. And then I was someday I'll show you all. I wasn't funny at all. I just did it just so people would shut up.
Someday I'll do the black version of Top Gun.
I was definitely a class clown for sure. You know?
In what way? Like big and boisterous or subtle and under the breath?
Big and boisterous and terrible. Like just like, and here's the problem was, and if I did really well in a class, like if I was getting good grades in a class, that's the class I acted a fool in because I knew the teacher could never say, well, if you ever shut up, maybe you could get more than a D minus. In the classes that I was not doing well in, I was quiet as a church mouse because I was like, no teacher's ever going to embarrass me. Like, you know what? The reason you're getting a D minus in here is because you don't shut up.
That's smart.
Wow. You knew where you could push it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Man. And then, is it ever a thought in your head, like, I'm going to be an actor?
Oh, I knew from the time I was like 7 years old. I wanted to be an actor. Yeah. I thought I was going to be a dramatic actor. Even though I was a class clown, I never put two and two together until I got to LA and started doing improv.
Was there one thing that made you go, I'm going to do this? Like one movie, one performance?
Yeah, I can tell you exactly what it was.
Yeah. Because
I was so young, so you have to understand my age when I explain this to you.
Okay.
It was Fonzie on Happy Days made me want to be an actor.
Whoa.
Because I wanted to be Fonzie.
You're 72?
I'm 72 years old. No. But I grew up, I'm old enough to have watched Happy Days in its original airings. And all little kids wanted to be Fonzie. All little boys wanted to be Fonzie. Yeah, this is like first, second, third.
He's the coolest
grade.
Guy in the history of television.
It's Fonzie. Like
he jumped a shark and wearing a leather jacket for God's sakes.
It was Fonzie. There was nobody cooler than Fonzie.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to be Fonzie. And luckily, as a little kid, in my little kid logic, I connected Fonzie to someone on TV. So I said, I want to do that. Luckily, I didn't know Fonzie was a mechanic, because if somebody told me he was a mechanic, then I'd be like, I'm going to be a mechanic.
Oh,
like,
Fonzie.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm glad I didn't figure that out.
There probably are some kids out there still doing that. They're like, wait a second. Listen to this podcast right now. But I thought that's what you did. And then you got discovered at the shop.
Right. Oh, boy.
Yes. What did you love about him? You thought he was...
I was a little kid, so it's that little kid logic of Fonzie's cool.
But did you think his catchphrases were funny and shit?
Yeah. You know what? It's funny because I rewatched like in the 90s when like TV Land like re-aired Happy Days.
Dude, yeah.
And I tried to watch it. A, I couldn't. It was unwatchable. And B, every joke was a sex joke. Every single joke. There was not a joke that wasn't a sex joke. And I was like, I didn't catch any of it. Why was I watching? Because I couldn't have been laughing. Because there was nothing on that show that
because it was all double entendre.
It was all double entendres.
Wow.
So I was like, "What? Wait,
so like,
why
was that? Jump was the pointless. Shark was a euphemism for jerking off, we just never knew that.
You're getting it now, Brad.
Have you met Winkler now?
I've met him a couple of times.
He's the man, isn't he?
Well, I mean, everybody knows he's legendary for what a nice person.
Yep.
He is.
Yeah.
And I had a friend who did a sitcom, guest starred on a sitcom. That he was like, "Oh, I'm doing the sitcom this week." Blah blah. I was like, "And I forget what show it was. It was a show a few years ago on CBS that Henry Winkler was on." I said, "Henry Winkler's on the show. Can you get me his autograph?" And he was like, "I don't know, because I'm just gonna say I'll ask."
Right.
Cut to a couple weeks later, I get in the mail two autographed pictures, like one 8x10 and one a little smaller, depending on the frame you want.
Wow.
From Henry Winkler to Jordan. You know, good luck with your acting. Keep it up. Stick with it.
Oh my God.
And then I met him a couple of times because I did a day on Children's Hospital and I met
him.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes. I met him on that and he was
so
sweet.
So funny, right?
Oh my God.
Did you tell him that story?
Oh yes. I told him. I've met him twice and I told him that story both times because I know he don't remember. You know?
And did he say like, I did that to everybody?
Yeah, I'm sure he's like,
the amount of people he's met and just line. Like made their days and you know years. But,
I mean, mostly because he's so cool and nice. It's crazy how nice he is.
I wonder if it's weird having the reputation of being like him and Hanks have the reputation of being like the nicest guys in
Hollywood.
It's
hard to have a bad day in front of somebody.
Yeah, because it's like, I'm sure Henry Winkler and Tom Hanks have their day and they're just like, fuck this shit. Yeah. Like, but they can't.
Right.
Because then it ruins it.
Or maybe they don't, though, you know?
I know. Maybe they figure something
maybe
out.
Maybe they're just better than us.
Yeah. Well, maybe they meditate. Better. They figured out that none of this garbage matters. And
right.
And they are grateful for what they have.
It's like I just want to know if they know like some secret, like or something that would
they might have access to some.
Be
juice.
Rich and have and be
rich.
Be rich and be famous.
Do Forrest Gump in Philadelphia back to back. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Be rich.
Back to back.
Don't spend
Oscars.
It all on a jet ski.
Do Happy Days. Be best friends with Richie Cunningham.
Yeah. No kidding.
Fucking
right?
Be in a movie with Gary Sinise.
Right. And so, funny enough, you seem to chill out.
What? Okay, so high school, is that where you start to like, I guess like home? Yeah, like improv or like?
Yeah, I started doing improv in eighth grade because I was taking drama classes in school from fourth grade on pretty much. And so in the eighth grade, they introduced improv. And once that got introduced, I'm not even kidding, it was like heroin. I was like,
whoa.
The first time I did it, I was just like, oh, I get to say whatever I want to say?
Yep.
Oh. When do I go up again?
Because
I got some shit to say.
Whoa.
I can't wait to say. I'm sure I was terrible.
Right.
But
you got laughs?
Yeah, I got laughs. I mean, terrible compared to how good I am now.
Okay. He's a legend. Jordan Black is a legend, everybody.
I would say terrible meaning I'm probably as good as you are right now, Adam.
Of course.
When
I started. Our guest has been Jordan Black on the About Last Night podcast. So we're going to wrap this up a little early tonight.
Don't follow him on Twitter. Don't go see his projects. Thanks for coming.
But it was like a shot of heroin, and I have not ever gotten it out of my system.
You know what?
That's incredible.
You know what the amazing part is to me is that, like, I would think that I would want to encourage any child and any adult if they haven't to take an improv class.
I think,
because it's that, like, it can only enhance your relationships, and it teaches you how to listen.
Yep.
And nothing teaches you how to listen more than improv.
Yeah.
So, like, it's such a valuable tool. People are like, well, I don't want to be on SNL. It's like, forget
right,
that. Just take it for life skills.
And some people do. Like, I remember when I took my first Groundlings class, there was this woman in the class who had just graduated law school, and she wanted to be a trial attorney. So she was taking it just so she could get comfortable.
She wanted to
perform. She wanted to be able to talk in front of people.
Yeah, because that's what she's going to have to do. Yeah. And then she's gonna have to improvise. She's going to have to have pressure situations. She's going to have to essentially play characters during the whole deposition. So,
wait, what are you picturing an attorney does?
Allie McBeal. Right? And then a little CGI baby comes out and does an
SNL audition for him.
Brad bases every life choice or decision on Allie McBeal.
Oh, okay. Absolutely.
Now it makes sense.
I have so much Vonda Shepard in my iPhone.
Oh, my God.
Deep Pole, can you tell I actually watched the show?
I didn't watch the
Allie McBeal drinking game at home.
I never saw Allie McBeal. I don't know that name, but I love the reference because I immediately know that you're pulling a deep cut.
That is a deep cut.
That's a deep
cut. She sang the theme song.
Okay. Wow. That's good. I love that so much.
I don't know. Oh, God. I'm going to get some crazy tweets after that. Like, you know, there's.
She'll probably follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, Calista Flockhart. Yeah, wife of Harrison Ford. Yeah. Nah, I don't follow her still. It's cool.
Guess you just followed me on Twitter today.
Who's that?
You know, sometimes you get a little, you know, you see a little pops
check
up.
Mark,
yeah, and you're like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, this is probably a fake account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Paula Abdul.
Get out.
I don't know what to do with that, but I feel like I got to do something.
You got to do
verified?
Did you follow her back?
Immediate. Well,
DM her, man.
I wait like 2 minutes.
Slide into those DMs.
Dude, I am going to the show on Wednesday. I'm flying up to take my sister and some friends. You know?
So you got
to
be like, hey, I'll be at the show. You know, you want to...
Dude, what?
Is there any way I can get backstage? I'm bringing my sister with me.
I'm already going backstage.
Just say your sister's special needs. Just say it. Doesn't have to, just say it. Because people can't tell the way it looks.
Yeah, have my sister.
She's on the spectrum. Just say she's on the spectrum.
Yeah, that's so all.
My sister doesn't have to do anything special. And you know, she's a super fan. She's going to be crying.
Yeah.
So there you go.
That'll make it look.
That'll fit. You play it cool. Do not show her your MC Scat Cat tattoo.
Well, that's okay. Don't tell me to live my life. But all right, we'll see. We'll see.
Because yeah, you'll be backstage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, you gotta like...
Dude, and it, but wait a minute. Now, is that my opening line? Hey, I saw you just follow me on Twitter.
Yeah, 100%.
That is your opening line.
100%. You better say that. Like,
is it?
Yes, because yes. It'll probably... She'll be like, did I? Why? Is there, she'll be like, but in a good way.
And then I can make a joke about it. And be like,
yeah, did you or your publicist just follow me on Twitter?
Right. Like, why would it... I mean... Probably no. I bet she runs it. I fed people.
Well, maybe if she's on tour with New Kids, right?
Yeah,
right.
So maybe that your maybe name came up in a show, conversation. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Or your name came up in a conversation.
Sure.
So. Maybe she saw some Laugh Factory videos. I don't know.
Or maybe she's just a fan of your comedy, Adam. Mm. Why do we have to act like it's so hard to figure out? People Jordan, like what
Jordan,
you do.
Jordan, so, have you seen his comedy?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Guys, so my comedy is catered towards pop stars from the 90s. And if you have a problem with that.
That's your audience.
Yeah. O-Town loves my shit. And where is your signed headshots?
You're right.
From O-Town. You know what? You got me there.
Yeah, me too.
I don't have that.
Yeah. How did you love doing the show?
Our show?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. First of all, I'm an actor. I'm always glad to work.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was great because the cast was great. It was so much fun on set. It was so easy and fun. I just loved it. Yeah.
Is there ever a...
Joey is the cutest new kid. I mean, what? Let's not fuck around.
Yeah, I was always more of a Donnie guy myself.
I get that. He's rugged. He's got that bad boy thing. You want to be hurt.
I want to be a bad boy.
I want to be taken care of. I just want to know that I'm going to be all right.
You want to be held.
Yeah, I want to be held.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And that's Joey. Joey's the one, you know, he's going to come home at night.
Right.
He's going to come home. Donnie, you won't see him.
He's not going to be that NBA player. But I mean, as long as we can bond over our hatred of Jordan, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fuck him.
Fuck that guy. Yeah, we'll don't. Well, of course, I gotta ask.
Who was my favorite cast member, you say?
Yeah, who was your favorite cast member with the initials AR?
Well, I mean, if you're gonna paint me into a corner, then let me think. Does it have to be someone in the cast? Could it be someone on the crew?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It was great.
How many comedy sets you've been on a ton of shows. So, like, mm-hmm. is there ever a set for comedy that's just maybe a little more constricting as far as like being able to improvise, like knowing what they're getting with you, you know what I'm saying? And like,
you know, it really is. Like if you do like I just did a kid's show this week. And so on that, it's all scripted. Like you're not improvising at all.
Cause they don't want you to do those happy days, dick jokes.
Well, it's just the way it's a machine. That's a machine.
Yeah, dude.
You know, we just crank them out. You know, we make our cotton candy and we send it out. Don't do watermelon flavor. I don't know why a black man had to say watermelon. No. I'm glad I said it.
I wasn't going
to
make the joke.
I would have given you guys a lot of shit.
But I was going to say pomegranate. Which
yeah,
is
pomegranate
not, you know,
is a better reference. Cause like, don't do an avocado. Yeah. Like just give us. Just give us the pink cotton candy and the white cotton candy and the blue cotton candy.
Right.
Wait, what was the kid's show?
I probably shouldn't say since I said it's like a machine.
Yeah. No, let's not even talk about that. Yeah. But
But then like, you know, like it depends on like the type of show you're, like when I work on shows where people actually know my work from ground.
Yes.
Then
they want you,
they tend to want me to like play around a bit with
it. Yeah. Is that how you got the role on Nobody's?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, because I know because I know Melissa's a Groundlings person.
Yeah, yeah, she's and all the cast of that show, the lead, they're all Groundlings, and I knew all of them from when we were all in Groundlings together.
That's the best. Right?
That's got to be amazing.
Yeah, what was funny is like when my agent called me about that, he was like, "Oh, I didn't remember that Nobody's." This was before the first season, so it wasn't on TV yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't remember that was the name of their show. So he was like, "Oh, they sent you an offer to be on Nobody's. You're going to play yourself," and I was like. And I was thinking, like, do they know I'm not famous enough to play? Like, I'm flattered that someone thinks that I can play myself. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, because it's the Groundlings, they're playing themselves, and they have Groundlings on there from the Groundlings.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. Because for a second, I was like, I should be making a lot more money. I'm super famous.
Which, how was that set? Like,
you had the director, Mike McDonald
yeah.
who you know is a Groundling, the cast Groundling. So, yeah, it was easy, super easy.
How's Mike as a director? Great,
of course, he's great. I just want you. I think that kind of training it helps you to keep it loose on set, because you want to let actors do what they do and just see what can happen. You know, give them that room.
Yeah, and it's great that he recognizes that, because a lot of directors are just like, this is my vision.
Yeah, and that's a bummer.
Yeah, because you're like, okay.
I mean, my thing is, as an actor, I always try to give the director whatever they want. Like, what is your vision? I'm going to try to deliver that for you. But sometimes it's like when they start to like nitpick your performance, you're like, in all honesty, I'm like, you probably cast the wrong person. Because if it's this hard for you to get me to do what you want me to do, you probably should have cast the person who just does this automatically and just instinctively, and who's going to give you all different shades of this color, as opposed to like trying to like, how do we, you know? Well, that's the thing. I said this in an interview recently. Like somebody asked me, like, what was one of the things I learned when I was writing at Saturday Night Live, and I said, if you cast the right people in your scene, it does not matter what you wrote. Really? You can write a terrible sketch, but if Will Ferrell is the lead, it's gonna be funny.
Home run, yeah.
It's gonna be funny.
He's gonna, he's gonna pause in the right places. I mean, I mean, when, and you know what? And you think about it, like his character in the sketch where he's the dad yelling at the kid playing on the field.
Yeah.
On the script, it says, "Get on that bag."
Mm-hmm.
That's all it says. Mm-hmm. And then Will takes and goes, "Get on that bag!" Like, and he just brings his flavor to it.
Which is what you want from former. Like, you want to write something that you know this person is going to kill this because it's just
Like, I'm sure if you wrote for Chris Farley, you'd be like, and then Chris does something funny.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, you could probably just put that in there and
then
count
Chris
on
yells at someone. Or And now, it's going to be funny.
You were there 90...
No, no, I was there 2003 and 2004.
That's right, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so who's that
there?
Cast?
Yeah. That was Tina Fey, Jimmy Fallon's last season. Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph, Will Forte, Fred Armisen.
Was Hader?
No, Hader was not there yet.
Okay.
Dude, that's an all-star lineup.
Yeah, it was great.
Fuck.
And Kenan Thompson's first season. Yeah, so
Kenan's been on there that long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you have that many people at your disposal, is it just, I mean, do you get overwhelmed as far as like how, what? Well, actually, you told me when we were on set about getting the job. Will you share that with Brad?
Yeah.
Sitting. Oh yeah. Sitting I mean, as far as like I auditioned for the show twice.
That's right.
I auditioned in 2001. I didn't get it. Then I auditioned again in 2003, and they offered me the writing job. So I went and did that. And I shared an office. Me and Jason Sudeikis started the same day as writers.
Okay.
And we shared an office.
Is that man as good looking in person as he is on TV?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. So, and he can play basketball. So fuck him. And I can't play basketball.
So fucking charming.
So fuck him. Yeah, you know. I think he played in college, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I know he played in college.
Some people have all the luck.
Yeah, right. And his uncle is George Wendt. So there's that.
What? I didn't even know that.
His aunt is George. So it's his uncle in law, but it's his uncle he grew up with.
Oh, okay. So I was like, how did
his aunt by blood is married to George Wendt?
Yeah, I was like, how did he get the looks of George Wendt?
Oh, there's a certain charm to George Wendt.
No shit. I would love to be attached to some supporting sitcom character from the 80s. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like if somebody was like, you know, Adam's fucking Marshall Warfield's stepbrother.
No, I was going to say nobody would believe that. But
good
that
pull.
Stepbrother. You
stepbrother.
You pulled
can
it
do
out
that.
In the
Thank
end.
You. Yeah.
You brought me.
Yeah, then.
Wait, so, okay. So then, were you bummed that you weren't...
I was totally bummed I wasn't in the cast.
Yeah.
That's why I ended up leaving.
Yeah.
You know, because I just was just like, no, I want to be on camera.
That's but you want to take the writing job because you're like, that's also a...
I mean, it's a long story, and I'm not going
to... All right. I don't want you to,
But I took the writing job and then eventually realized at the end of the season I didn't want to come back.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did. It was a great experience in the sense that it was the first time I worked on a show that had cultural relevance, meaning I could tell people like, oh, yeah, I'm working on Saturday Night Live, and they didn't have any more questions.
Yeah.
As opposed to like other things I've done, like I'm on this show. What's that on WB? What channel is that? I don't think I get that channel.
Right.
It's like I'm like, no, you get it. You get that channel. Just
it's nice when you just say the name of the project.
Yeah, and people are just like, oh wow, that's so cool.
Like they have a frame of reference for it. Like, oh, I know what you do now.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now they know you're in show business for real. Because before they're just like, oh, that's so cute. Good luck. I have a friend who does extra work. If you ever would pitch, I'd have relatives pitch to me. Like, I'm like, no, like I've done speaking roles. I've done speaking roles on things. You just haven't seen them.
Right.
What were some of the highlights from the experience that like...
Oh, God. Like, well...
Like, writing... Like,
I was there for Justin Timberlake's first episode, and I got a sketch on that he did.
Wait, you told me this on...
Yeah, we did the parody of Punk'd.
That's right.
Sudeikis and I wrote it, and he played Ashton Kutcher.
Perfect.
And people loved that sketch. That was pretty huge. And then Janet Jackson hosted when I was there, and that was a dream.
Holy shit.
Come
there
true.
You go. I mean, bring it all back.
Got her to autograph a CD for me. Trying to think what else. It's kind of a blur, actually.
Wait, how is Janet?
Trump. I was there for Trump's first.
Okay. All right. Episode. Well, put a pin in the Janet story.
Okay.
And
you want to hear
Trump.
Trump? Yeah, you hear some Trump stuff?
Sure.
Okay, so here's... Back then, this is 03-04 when Trump...
So this is right when the... Not even the Celebrity Apprentice. It was just
this
the Apprentice.
This was Celebrity Apprentice. Yeah, just the Apprentice, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was the first season of the Apprentice.
Yeah.
And that's why he was hosting, because it was such a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump comes to host, and I'll start at the end. After his week was up... And people would say to me, what was Trump like? This is what I would always say all over the years from that day to this one, when people say it had nothing to do with politics.
He wasn't running.
I would say, I think he's one of the dumbest people I've ever met. That, not even kidding. This was in 03-04. He was one of the dumbest people I've ever met.
Based on what sentences?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So let's just say, for example.
Sure.
This kind of person is, which we all are aware of this now. This won't be a surprise, but at the time, it kind of surprised me because I wasn't aware of what he was like off camera.
Yeah, we all just think he's a successful businessman.
I mean, I knew he was kind of, a fake. Because real business, like Bill Gates doesn't have a reality show because he doesn't have time to be on a reality show.
He's too busy got
a
big doing
empire
shit.
He's running.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
People have empires to run, don't do reality shows.
Right.
So there's a lot of, like, you know, false.
That was your high school yearbook quote, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. But anyway, so like the very first day that we meet him in Lauren's office for the pitch session, with all, for those who don't know, it's all the writers and the performers. Yep. You pitch to the host just ideas for the week that you think they might be
nerve wracking, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So somebody pitches like, oh, we'll do a bit, because he had just been on Oprah. Somebody's like, oh, we'll do a thing where you go on Oprah and blah, 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 because Maya was on the show and she did Oprah. So somebody pitched that. Whatever. It doesn't care. There's no stakes to the pitch meeting. It's just like, whatever. It's just really just for the everybody to meet the host and sort of get a vibe. And so, not having anything to do with the pitch, he says, "Yeah, I just did Oprah a couple of weeks ago, and highest rated show she ever had. They want me to come back in a few weeks. Highest rated Oprah." And I'm sitting there going, like, "This is why he's stupid," because I'm like, "Well, I'm a big Oprah show fan, and I know the highest rated Oprah show ever. It was when she lost 65 pounds on Slim Fast." And she dragged out the red wagon of 65 pounds of beef in her size 10 jeans. And historically, they always bring up this was the highest rated.
Right.
And I'm like, if your show was the highest rated, it makes no sense. But if it was, it would have gotten in the press. So I remember going like, well, we're in show business. Some of us actually know you're lying. I'm not your dry cleaner or your caddy who, whatever you say, Mr. Trump,
you know? Doesn't watch TV.
So, and then the other thing he did, we were at the table read, and one of the sketches was, at this time, he had yet another failed business that was in the New York Press, and something was going out of business. Some
Trump vodka, something, Trump steaks.
I think it was one of the casinos or something.
Hey, about one of the kazoos.
So like someone,
Trump kazoos?
All right. Trump kazoos.
Trump kazoos. Yeah.
Someone wrote a sketch about
church.
It.
Church. Church.
Okay. And worth
those
it.
That's a really good impression.
Those are Trump kazoos, though.
That was worth it.
Church.
I'm glad you had to tell me. I didn't know. I did it.
Spacework is terrible.
That's how you know that it's a good impression when you have to explain exactly what it is. Yep. That's how you know.
So somebody writes a sketch about whatever that failed casino is. Just some funny sketch about it. Sure. And so when the
he loved a sketch about a business that failed.
Yeah, of course. Because when the sketch was finished, you know, at the end, everybody would clap and everything. We move on to the next sketch. We got like 40 sketches to read.
Yeah.
He goes, "Where do you see how this ends up in the end? Where do you see?" And all I was thinking was like, we won't ever know because we don't give a shit about how this ends. Right. It's literally just a joke. You're the host. We're trying to figure out some frame of reference. You're in the news right now for this, so we referenced it. Mm-hmm. So he's like, "Where do you see how this comes out in the end? Where do you see?" And I'm like, "We're not in business with you. We're not gonna check in a couple of weeks and go, how's that thing going?" You're like,
"No,
you're just hosting the show. Like, we're not gonna check in with Justin Timberlake with, you know, how his album sales are going, because we don't give a shit. He's not the host.
You're
this
in
week.
And out, man.
You're in and out." So just the fact that he thought he needed to defend his failing business to a room full of comedy writers.
Wow.
Like, what's wrong? We don't know what's happening.
Dude, that's psycho behavior, man. Yeah.
And then the last thing, Melania was in the dressing room. Tina Fey told this story.
Because
the next week, everybody was sharing their Trump stories. So Tina Fey shared this story. She was in the dressing room night of the show, right before we go out, going over the opening monologue with him. And he had this joke, which I think is a good joke. He says, I'm a very successful businessman, and I've made love to many women who have won awards for their beauty. Melania's sitting there. They're dating. They're not married this time. Mm-hmm. She goes, "Us, and I'm just one of many." And all I could think was like, A, the answer to that question is
yeah.
You should be. It's pretty clear. You're 25 years younger than
right,
him. He fucks women for their beauty.
Yeah, and he looks like he does, and you look like you do.
And it's a joke for a sketch show. Like, he's mocking his image. Like, you don't get that's the joke. You think do you think he's giving a speech, a literal speech about his life?
Yes, so he
just
does.
Yeah, us and I'm just one of me. So the other thing, and I don't know how much time we have left. Seth Meyers told a story where he was on set with Trump that week.
Was he writing or a cast member at this point?
He was a cast member.
Okay.
And they're going through rehearsals, right?
Yeah.
And Trump walks over to him and pulls a tiny piece of paper out of his pocket and hands it to Seth.
Yes.
And it and on the piece of paper is the ratings for The Apprentice that week, showing that it was number one in its time slot. And he didn't say a word. He just handed it to him to let him know, like, why, I guess, like, look at my show. Again, Seth's in show business. We know how ratings work. Right. We don't. He's on SNL. It's not like he's looking for a gig. Like, hey, can you get me hired on The Apprentice? Your show's like. But Seth said, so he took that piece of paper. Trump had to walk away for a second. Mm-hmm. He said he snuck the piece of paper into his own pocket. He said, I got to show this to people that he gave this to me. But cut to a few minutes later, Trump comes back home and goes like, I need that piece of paper back. Because of course he wants to show it to
somebody else.
He's got to show it to other people.
Oh my God.
And by the way, you can't, so he's doing the same bit. He can't just say, which is still a douchebag thing to say, but he can't just be like, hey, just so you know, the ratings were this good on my show. He has to hand you a piece of paper.
Waiting
like
for you to be impressed.
Well, the original plan was to have a bunch of tiny pieces of paper with the ratings written down, but I thought that would be too embarrassing.
I was going to shoot him out.
I'll take the same piece of paper and pass it around the group.
Because I'm going green.
And then the last one.
I was going to shoot him out of a confetti cannon.
The last
ticker
one.
Tape parade.
The last Trump story was Finesse Mitchell was on the show at that time.
Yes.
And Finesse told us the following week that he clearly peeped Trump's insecurity. Mm-hmm. And so because sometimes guests would like, they give cast gifts and writer gifts, like, you know, like when Justin Timberlake hosted, he gave everybody expensive champagne and
dope,
you know, like, and but not everybody gave a gift and nobody cared. Whenever you got a gift, you were like, oh, what's this? Oh, that's so nice.
Did Janet give something?
No. Not to the, at least the writers. And sometimes just the cast would get gifts.
Yeah, gotcha.
But I didn't get anything from Janet except what I got in the sheets. You know what's up, Janet girl. You know what's up, girl. don't act funny now.
Kankakee.
She heard that. Yeah. But anyway, but Finesse said to Trump, he goes, he was like, you know, we had Kelly Ripa hosting last week, and man, she gave the cast gifts, and they were such great gifts. Like, nobody will ever be able to beat her. Like, it was so great. He was, and cut to, who do you think fucking sent cast gifts? Just to the cast, by the way, not to the writers.
Right.
Trump, he sent them gifts. And that's all, and Finesse was just playing him.
Yes.
Because he saw, like,
he knew.
He knew
the ego.
I'm going to get a gift from this motherfucker right here.
Yeah.
But that's how.
Do you know what it was?
So now you think about Putin playing him.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whoever.
Oh, my God. You're like,
he's so easily played.
What a great.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Yeah.
If Finesse Mitchell, he's a smart guy. He's great. He's
very smooth.
He's no Putin. He's not a world leader.
He's not
an evil genius.
Yeah, he's not conniving.
Right.
But, dude, if you can be like Kelly Ripa did this.
Yeah.
And what do you think Putin's saying? Right. Is he like, Kelly Ripa also did, she gave us the best secrets.
I hope he does. That's what
until Putin's now, we just got nothing on me.
Kelly Ripa gave us the nuclear codes. So if you, I mean, no one would ever do that. No one would ever be that nice.
Well, I outgifted Kelly Ripa so I can outcode her too. Oh my God, dude. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Scary, right?
That's
your president. Y'all voted for him. Y'all put him in office. Black people did. Because we didn't even vote at all. But
yeah. You're like, I'm out.
That was some bullshit, but black people should have voted because Hillary would have won. But, you know, Hillary doesn't give black people a reason to vote
for
her.
But LeBron endorsed Hillary. I thought that was like.
Oh, yeah. You know what? God, how did black people miss that? Because we all do what LeBron does.
Didn't you get the newsletter?
Oh, man. You know what? He must have put it on the internet and black people just ain't on that. We just ain't on that.
They on the internets.
Yeah. Can you do that joke, Brett?
I think I can.
It was good. That's a good joke. Wait, the Bill Maher joke.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
My opinion.
Okay. Wait,
that was a funny fucking joke that he couldn't not say. If somebody says to you, come work with us in the fields, and your mind goes to, I'm a house nigga, you're a fucking improv genius, because that's a great joke. I don't care who you are. I would let Trump tell that joke, because I'm like, that's too good. That's just too good of a joke.
He also, you saw, I mean, the timing, I think.
And I'm not a big Bill Maher defender. Like, lot of stuff he says fucking pisses me off.
Sure.
But that was a great joke.
But now, I saw Whoopi on the Quiznos. Uh-huh. She was getting a turkey range in Swiss. I said, please don't take the last bag of chips. I love baked lays. And and she goes, huh? And I go, And that's my
Are
Whoopi.
Are you serious?
That's my Whoopi impression. But that is my Whoopi impression.
Okay. You're,
but I love baked lays.
Your Whoopi impression sounds like a St. Bernard barking.
It also sounds like. Back to Bill Maher. And, so, but
I thought that was a great joke. So, and but, I feel bad that he's getting so much shit. Because my thing is, a lot of times when a joke is offensive, what I say is, if it was funny,
yeah,
you could do it. You got to be funny. Like, a lot of people get
the
jokes.
The audience laughed.
Yeah, if the it's a good. The problem is this. Mm-hmm. It's a very sensitive time, and people got to get over that. I think that's bullshit. You can't be sensitive about art, and comedy is art.
Right.
It's an all white audience. That's always a problem.
Totally.
That's always like, yeah.
You His know. Timing though was like, and that's what
it was
like,
fucking brilliant.
If he had waited a beat later, like he literally, the guy said, "Work in the fields." Mm-hmm. Mar made a face,
yeah,
which was like reacting to it. Mm-hmm. Then the wheels turned.
Yeah.
Then he repeated it, "Work in the fields,"
right,
and then said the joke. It was kind of just like boom, brilliant. Boom, boom. Now what Whoopi said on The View, and that's the first time I've said that sentence, is that she goes, "I think we're giving the word too much power."
Well, fuck that. That's nuts. Now, that's bullshit.
Now, because
not everybody can say it. Not everybody can say that.
So what do you think about that?
Context. My thing with the N-word is context. Anybody can say it. And obviously, we live in a free country. You can say it.
Yeah.
You just got to be willing to take the heat if you say it. I would never tell anybody like, oh, you can't say that word. I'm just saying, but if you say it, you might get, yes, you got to be willing to take what comes with it.
Louis C.K. has said it.
Yeah, but fuck him. Ralphie May, I don't agree with it.
I think some people go out of their way to like
shock,
use it.
To be shocked.
Yeah, man, because it's like.
But I'll tell you, I'll get to Louis C.K. and Ralphie May in 2 seconds.
Okay.
But it's context is my point. Like, you can say it. If you're like, you know, there's this Bob Dylan song, Hurricane, about Reuben Hurricane Carter. You remember the movie?
One of my favorite movies of all time.
He has this song that he put out, like, in the 60s or 70s, whenever, like, that case first was a thing. And he put out a song to promote this story, to tell people this guy's in jail. He's been locked up, you know, and wrongly convicted. And he uses the N-word in the song in a specific context where you go, well, then you can't say to people, like, you can never use that word. It's appropriate in that song.
Sure.
And no one's going to be offended when they hear it. And if you are offended, you're looking for a reason to be offended.
Yeah. Because if no one told you that was Bob Dylan and no one told you that was a white guy, then you would have just been like, okay, cool.
But even if you know he's white, when you hear the story, you're like, oh, he's really trying to help this brother get out of jail.
Yeah,
and the context in which he's using the word is the context in which he should be using the word.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Louis C.K., more so, Ralphie May, like, I've seen Ralphie May live, and I was always like, you know what? I have a beef with somebody that says I can make fun of anybody because I make fun of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, but your jokes about other people, you can't punch down. That's my thing.
Right.
If you're going to make jokes about black people and you're white, you have to be the joke.
Yeah.
If it's like, you know, Chris Rock did that thing about if you're skinny, you can't make fun of fat people, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you're fat, you can make fun of skinny people all day, you know. Right. And so like with Louis, my thing is, I know he goes out and he says his thing and it's like, you know, and he's into like, you know, you should be able to say what you want in words, blah, blah, blah. But my thing is, and I agree with all of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a beef with him saying it. I have a beef with who he says it in front of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's easy to get away with saying the N-word in front of an all-white audience.
Right.
Do that shit at the Apollo. And if they laugh, I promise you funny.
Yeah.
If you get them to laugh at you saying the N-word, you're funny.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying he couldn't do it, but I'm saying right now you haven't done that. So you really haven't earned the right.
It's strange to me.
It's like me doing a bunch of Jewish jokes in front of an all black audience. Yeah, they're rolling. Like, it's like, well,
no shit.
There's some history there.
Right.
Like, I don't know if you're being daring. Who's going to come for you in that audience?
Yeah.
Right. You know? One thing that always gets me about it is like, because some people want to defend Mar and they say, well, like, we should be allowed to say that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because like, I'm like, okay, free speech, but. Who wants to say the word?
I know.
I don't want to say it.
Dude.
Well, you want to, Brad. Come on, let's be real.
Oh,
you just
God, I've been begging.
Brad does have a brilliant joke. What is the
what? Oh, no, the actual joke, or are we doing a bit here?
No, you're the actual joke.
Oh, okay. I talk about black people for a bit and compliment them and say, I wish I was black. Mm-hmm. A black midget, I'd be a nigglet.
Yeah, that's fine. Here's the thing. I
got a pass. You heard it.
I don't speak for all black people.
I can say ER. But no. I can add the ER. As a black guy heard it. You heard it here, people.
As a comedy fan,
I'm in the clear.
But I think most people.
I'm going to go outside and scream it. Be right back, guys.
But here's the thing, Brad. You're also a minority. And you know what it's like to be treated different for the way you look.
Yes.
So there's a commonality there and an affection there. And like Bill Maher's joke, I felt was said with affection. I really do. I don't feel like he was trying to go after black people.
No.
And so, but you know. But
I mean, and if you know anything about Bill Maher, he goes after black people, but strictly in the sexual sense.
Right, there's that. And like, I didn't like the shit Bill Maher used to say about Obama not being black enough and he should go gangsta. I was like, motherfucker, it's more to black people than just thuggery.
Right, because then
like
you have the highest man in the highest office in the land, and he's still doing that. Yeah. Like, no, you want to strive to be better. So,
like, there's room for thugs, but there's room for Obama. Yeah, like, we run the, just like white people, we run the gamut.
Did you ever want Obama just to fucking, I mean, when he would sing like Marvin Gaye and shit, I was like, isn't that fuck, like, how much to be, like, I definitely would hear some people being like, why doesn't he just fucking, like, come out in a fucking chain and a blunt?
No.
And it's like, what are you talking about?
If that was
about?
Who he was, sure be, I'm gonna be yourself. Yes. That's who he is.
Yeah.
He's a thoughtful, smart, intelligent.
He's Harvard educated.
Harvard educated.
So he's not going to do that kind of stuff.
Right. You know, Sharpton will do that. You know, like, and that's Sharpton. He's done well with that.
Yeah.
But everybody can't be. Sharpton couldn't get elected with that, though.
No, absolutely not. And thank you for bringing that up. And thank you for talking about it, because if it was just Adam and I talking about it, then
it would
make
be very
sense.
Uncomfortable for everyone. But yeah, you know, my thing is, I don't believe in censoring anyone. I believe you should say whatever you want to, whatever your voice is, speak it.
But then
I believe if there's some truth to it, I think people will feel that. Mm-hmm. If there's some like you just getting your rocks off, like if you're punching down, I think audiences feel that too.
Yeah,
you know. So
and I don't think Mara was punching down with that joke.
He it's not like he said it wasn't in his monologue. If that was a joke that he put in his opening monologue, I'd be like, yeah, you walked into that. It's like
because you thought about it, you planned it,
right?
You had multiple opportunities to say no. It's with some of these off the cuff jokes, like with how some comics get in trouble for how they handle hecklers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no,
right?
You cannot get mad at a comic for how they handle a heckler.
Yep, you can't,
because we are thinking just funny and how to get out of this situation.
Unless it's Michael Richards calling the hecklers niggas.
Well, yeah, that was
dude.
When you have a hard ER on that and you're pointing at him.
What did you
say
of his
that
was crazy. What did you think of his apology?
First of all, like, I'm not one to go all in on people for, like, I don't think he's a racist. I just think he's a classic white guy who grew up not around people of color.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like Donald Sterling or Donald Trump, who've been around too many yes people for too long,
right?
And didn't think everybody loves everything I say. It's like, have you ever met, I'm sure you guys have, you meet some celebrity, let's say, who's not known for comedy, let's say like Bradley Cooper.
Sure.
Yeah. You meet Bradley Cooper, and this is me, I'm telling on myself, if I'm sitting here with Bradley Cooper, Bradley Cooper cracks, you know, he says something, it's not that funny, I'm rolling.
Sure.
Because I want him to like me. Not, I'm not thinking about it first. This happens naturally. Yes.
Right.
And then I'll catch myself like,
you should tell Michael Richards that N-word joke.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, it's not that for Jordan. Calm the fuck down.
Yeah, dude, I know.
Because you're just kissing. Now, it happens completely subconsciously. You're just doing.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about
you
it.
Want them
you
to
just
like
want
you. That's
it.
All you know is I want
a bad trait, by the way.
It's not like, a bad instinct.
No.
Right. I love you. Like, I want us to be friends.
Yeah.
Right.
But now when Bradley Cooper goes on Jimmy Kimmel and he does that joke that I laughed at.
He goes, dude, Jordan loved
that. I'm so funny.
Yeah, man.
And then the audience goes, and it's like, yeah, they don't know. Yep. Like, everybody everyone laughs at this joke when I tell it. Oof. Yeah, your friends. Yeah.
Dude,
your friends
exactly.
are laughing. These people in the audience don't know you.
So, So Michael could have been doing that kind of stuff.
I mean, I'm sure he probably thought, like, oh, I'm going to be edgy. I'm going to, you know, whatever. And I'm a little panicked.
Right. Yeah. And then he probably didn't know he was being taped and all
that.
Yeah, of
course. He 100% didn't know he was
being taped. Because the thing is I fully believe that things like that have happened in comedy clubs.
Of course,
we just didn't see it.
Which I think, and that's the demise of comedy.
Yes,
because I think Michael Richards doing that and nobody being around is like, that's on him. You know, he's got to deal with that issue.
Right.
But I do think that's kind of the beauty of going to a comedy club. Like, I was there one night. I kid you, fucking kid you not. Kramer called me a nigga. You lying? No, man. I'm telling you, I was up in the balcony. I was talking to my girl. He got mad that we was talking to some. He pointed right at me and said, "It's a nigger." I'm not, man, get out of here.
Dude, Kramer?
I can tell that's, now I can dine out on that for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a great story.
And guess what? That would have been that story. It just would have been that had the
video
been, not
yeah,
been there.
Yeah.
It would have been legend.
It would have been a legend. Like, man, I heard the Kramer was a racist. Yeah, he went out on the show and called. It's like, nah, man.
Nobody would have bought
not
that.
Not Kramer.
Yeah.
Right. Now, speaking of people who aren't racist, you both have worked with Christopher Guest.
Mm-hmm.
That's my segue.
What did you work with them on?
Mascots.
Oh, awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. That was
with my girl Sarah Baker.
Yeah. Oh, she's so funny.
That's my girl.
Worked so much, but I just want to know, like, to me,
Dream.
I mean,
let me tell you how I booked that?
Yes.
Because I did his movie For Your Consideration.
Yep.
And
so good on it, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
No,
so
man, like,
but I'm going to tell you how I booked it.
But let me tell you on set, like, I like in a movie with so many great moments, mm-hmm. like it was you and Coolidge, right?
Yeah.
And I always forget the story we're doing with the glasses.
Paul. Are you talking about in the trailer scene?
Yes. When you're pitching ideas for
his name is Paul, I believe. Paul. He's a classic.
He's in all the movies.
He's in every movie, and he's George Clooney's best friend.
Yeah.
And Sandra Oh was in that scene. But yeah. Anyway.
But dude, I mean, I remember like
he was in A Serious Man with the Coen Brothers movie. What's his name? Anyway.
But anyway, you stood out in that scene, and I remember like so.
Thank you.
Anyway, so.
But here's how. This is why I booked that show. When I was hearing that. Some of my friends were meeting with Christopher Guest.
Paul Benedict.
There you go. Great actor. Yep. I was hearing that some of my friends were interviewing, so I called my agents. I was like, you guys think you can get me an interview with Christopher Guest? And they're like, yeah, let's see what we can do. You know, when they came around, like, yes, we got your interview. I was done. I knew that I'd be able to tell my grandkids I met Christopher Guest. Yeah, I met him. I went and interviewed with him because, you know, he doesn't audition you. You just talk to him, have a conversation.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing.
So I was, because I wasn't trying to book anything, I already had received my reward. I was so relaxed at that. And we were chatting and joking around. I had no nerves because I was like, I got everything I wanted was this meeting. If I never see you again in my life, I met Christopher Guest before.
Yeah, and have a conversation.
And had a conversation with
just you and him in the room.
Yep. So it was. I think there was one. Well, the casting director was in there.
And shooting for me, it was just him and him in the room.
Yeah.
It was
great. And so then when I booked it, that was just the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
You know? No nerves after that.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. And he's my favorite director I've ever worked with. And you, I'm sure, saw this on set, which is I was blown away by his directing style, which is action and cut. Right.
That's
pretty
it.
Much.
His only notes would be like, all right, now let's do that again, but... And that's it.
What? Yeah, I mean, the only time he gave me any note was to say something I had said in a scene. Like, he was like, what's his name from The Office?
Krasinski?
No, the original
Steve
Office.
Steve Carell. Oh, Ricky Gervais.
He goes, Ricky Gervais is already doing something like that in another scene.
Yeah.
So just avoid that topic.
Great.
But I mean, otherwise it was just like, I mean, literally he wouldn't say like, you know, Jordan, get in there more, or Coolidge in this one, try to like, if he says that, nothing. Like
nothing.
He would go action and he go cut. All right, let's do another one. No notes. Action. You can do a totally all different dialogue.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. I'm like, but see, again, you cast who you want.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to cast people.
I
want to watch you
he
do
knows
what you
who
do.
You are.
I mean, literally he sent, all I had was the script and my character pretty much wasn't even in the script.
Yeah.
So everything I said was none of it was in the script. Like there was never none of those moments were in the script.
Yeah.
So I just
you think that's like, I mean, I guess it is who you cast the right people, then that style is maybe the best there is.
Yeah.
I mean,
but also because he's a performer, he probably knows that's what I would want. I want you to just make me feel like I'm as I've directed like at Groundlings and stuff. And one of the things that I've learned is that if the people on stage know that you're a fan, they will soar. They'll go, I can do anything because Jordan thinks everything I do is fucking great.
And we're going to try
so
things.
We can always try.
Things.
They'll try things and then we can pull them back and steer them in a certain. But I'll get to see all of their moves because they're not afraid, like, oh, I don't want to get yelled at. So I won't do that. I'm not going to do that because I don't want to get yelled at.
You're free. Like, I would describe his set as being free to try.
Yeah, you're free to mess up because no one's going to give you shit about it. They're just like, let's try it a different way. You know?
So, yeah.
I love that.
I just love that when he would like a take, he at the end of the take, he would just be like, well, that was that.
It reminds me of like stories I've heard about Woody Allen, how Woody Allen would just like, I can't do any impression, so I won't try. He'd walk up to actors.
It's a horrible Woody. It's a horrible Woody.
It's better than mine. But he'd just be like, oh, let's do it again. This time, better. Like, oh
wow,
okay. I'm only an Oscar winner, but
it's just so funny. It's like, I guess you put out enough hits and then like your style it becomes like renowned, where it's like he just does that.
Well, you know, I heard Alec Baldwin talking about when he did Blue Jasmine.
Yeah
And he said he was doing the scene with Cate Blanchett where she's like emoting, like, because her character's been crazy.
Right.
Like,
love that
like
movie.
Basically just like all the emotions you had, and that he came was like, bigger, can you do it a little bigger? Like, give me a little more. And he's like, she's got nothing. Like, so then next, like, yeah, just I really want to see more of this look.
But maybe that's all.
Yeah, just like him, challenging. Just like, it's a challenge.
I would think too that maybe with actors like that, that of her stature, that you're just like,
I know she can do.
Why
it.
Why should I over explain something to her? Just be like, do
but
that
he does
again.
That with everybody.
Yeah, you're Cate Blanchett. You can. Do, it's like
he's like, I've
Jordan.
Seen your work. I
yeah,
know.
It's like telling Jordan, like, more points.
Yeah.
See, and I guess that's better, like better than him being like, "Hey, remember that face when you were like, yeah, like make a bigger, like yeah, like bigger faces, you know? Yeah. Have you ever had that?
No, make a bigger. I've had that probably at auditions.
Yeah,
you know, like bigger. I never take that note, by the way.
Yeah,
note to actors.
Brad, have you gotten that?
When they say
note?
bigger,
yet no one's ever gonna look at me and be like, bigger, and be like, you son of a bitch.
I'm suing because then they have to cast you. They have to.
And they have to.
So you should start doing every audition really dead.
Really, just like low energy.
And
then
you do it bigger. I'm fucking suing you.
I'm a
No. We want you for the part.
I have achondroplastic dwarfism. It is impossible for me to get bigger. You son of a bitch. I'm calling Gloria Allred.
Oh, my God.
Well, now I have my new audition technique. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank
Jordan,
you, buddy.
Thanks for doing this.
Oh, this is a blast. Thank you, guys.
How often are you at the Groundlings doing shows?
Every Wednesday, pretty much. I do the Crazy Uncle Joe show, which is a long-form improv show. And then we'll start doing some black versions there starting at the end of July.
Is there a site for that?
Yeah, theblackversion.com.
Hell yeah.
Yep. When will this go up?
Next week.
Okay, great. Yeah, go to theblackversion.com.
Love it, buddy.
This was so hard, you guys. This was really hard. I mean, I feel I haven't talked this much in so long. Thank you for this. I'm you know, we're off the air, right?
Yeah.
You know, guys, it's just like all that stuff about Trump, it brought up so much, you know.
You have a little PTSD?
A little bit.
Yeah, quick, somebody get him a Fonzie headshot.
I mean, here's the thing. People ask me, did you vote for Trump? Of course I did. You know, what choice? I couldn't go for crooked Hillary. Hillary Clinton.
Yeah,
Benghazi, guys. Like, it happened. Benghazi happened.
Yeah.
So I was like, I had to vote for Trump, you know, and I'm still holding out hope that, you know, his ban will get passed, you know. But other than that, it's just like, you know, this. I needed this is what I'm saying. I needed to talk today.
Good.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.